What's up, Wisconsin? This is Raised in Wisco. I'm your host, Joel Clayfish. The hostess with the mostest, Danielle Fairman, has the week off, but that's all right. Ellie Lawton, the chefferie, the chef of the show, the outstanding award-willing culinarian of Raised in Wisco is filling in while Danielle has the week off.
And it's a lot of pressure.
It is a lot of pressure because Danielle and I, we've been doing this a long time
I'm
together.
I'm super nervous.
Nothing makes you nervous. Nothing throws you for a loop, I have learned. I don't know of anything that really throws you for a loop.
I have thick skin, and that's not just because I'm a little fat.
Yeah, well, life in politics will give you thick skin, too. I have thick skin and thick fat under it, so I got a double whammy layer.
Look at you go.
Look at me go, man. Try to stop me. We have an awesome show tonight. I'm pretty excited because this is the time of year that hunters, anglers, outdoors folks live for in Wisconsin. Not only do we have the beautiful changing of the leaves, I mean,
yes, so beautiful.
And I want to talk a little bit today about like what everybody's favorite tree is that changes. I'm just going to take maple right off the bat. I'm going to
say mine.
Maple. Well, that's just because they have the most colors, right?
I'll come up with something else.
Yeah, you just don't say oak. They just turn brown and fall
off. Oh, oak.
Yeah, oaks are horrible.
Oh, shoot.
Oaks are for me.
Why would you say that?
Because they have acorns and the deer are going to come underneath there. And
yes.
Oh, that's not a bad idea. And you know what else eats acorns, like by the bushels, is wild hogs, wood ducks.
Squirrels.
Squirrels and something else. Bears. Bears like
ooh,
I believe
bears
too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, hold on to your hats. Hold on to your seats and your hats because the voice of mystery that you are hearing is not only one of the greatest outdoors folks I know, but also part of the new generation of hunters and fishermen who is coming up. And this guy, our guest tonight, I'm very proud to have known him for quite a while. He's married. He's and his wife supports doing the outdoor stuff and is learning the outdoor stuff with him. She is part of the fastest growing group of new hunters, which
women.
She's coming. She's coming.
Is she really?
I'm working on it.
Okay, because I feel a little outnumbered here, but I think I can handle it.
Oh, boy. One show, and Ellie's got more men here than women, and they can't beat up on me.
Make you all cry.
That's a fact. I don't doubt that for 1 minute.
Except Noah. I wouldn't make him cry.
I think it's probably hard to make Noah cry. But then why would you want to make
Noah cry? Noah's too happy.
He's like the nicest guy you've ever met.
Yeah, no kidding.
The voice you're hearing, though, is a young man who has a lifetime of outdoor experiences behind him already, and that's why he's on the show, Cal Hadia. And I want to talk to you. Your dad, Eric Hadia, is a very, very well-known outdoorsman in the state of Wisconsin. He's done TV. He's done radio. He's done blogs back when blogs started. He's done podcasts. Your dad is kind of a preeminent name in the outdoors in the state of Wisconsin for hunting, for fishing, more for fishing, I would say.
Probably. Yeah, most definitely.
And and you're his son. And I want to kind of get into during the show today, you know, if that's a little tough, if that's hard to follow the name of someone with such credibility in the business and the industry. Yeah. I am blessed with daughters, so they don't have to worry about, you know, their dad in the hunting. They're not really in the hunting industry. But a lot of the things that your dad is known for, being a phenomenal fisherman, a phenomenal hunter, did that, Cal, and how old are you now, Cal?
24.
You're 24 years old. So you're a youngster. You're like on the cusp of millennial and Gen Z. And you and I have hunted together. You're 24. We've hunted together a good 8 years probably.
It's been a long
16,
time now.
17 years old.
Yeah, it's been a while now.
Yeah, I've watched you grow up. But you've always been someone who's taken the outdoors seriously. You were really into waterfowl hunting. Yeah. And then you kind of moved into the whitetail. A lot of waterfowlers start out because it's exciting. You got to get to kill more stuff. Yeah. Then you moved into the whitetail arena, which is kind of it's a different draw because once you start learning patience, you know, the evolution of a hunter, you start out, you just want to kill stuff and take it home and eat it.
Yeah.
Once you get past that, you know, what was the transition for you? When we met in a goose hunting field, and we hunted waterfowl every chance we got, and you kind of started drifting from that. What was that transition?
You know, I can't think of, well, there's a lot of reasons, honestly. So not only, you know, my dad was never super big into waterfowl. So like that's part of the, you know, honestly, part of the reason why I got super, super, super into it, because I didn't have a lot of exposure from that when I was a kid. And then...
So was it a little bit, I mean, I don't want to say rebellious, but a little bit like, hey, my dad's really well known for these things. I'm going to try something different in the same arena?
Big time. So my big thing when I was, you know, like... When I was a younger adult, I guess I should say.
Yeah, you're still a young adult. Don't rub it in.
I'm a young adult too.
Yeah. Whatever you say.
I just didn't want to be in a shadow, honestly.
Yeah.
That's the big thing.
That makes sense.
I didn't want to be in a shadow for a long time.
Well, and your dad excelled, and I could see why you wouldn't want to be in that, I guess, shadow, right? You want to do waterfowl. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was a big shadow for a long time until, you know, up until recently, you know.
You hear that a lot. You hear that a lot when people have quasi-famous, regionally famous, you know, parents, that the children don't want to be in the shadow. But there are also benefits to being in the shadow, right?
100%.
How did you balance that, and what did you see as some of the benefits? Because I know your dad. I think he's a great guy. Phenomenal outdoorsman. Very ethical, successful outdoorsman. And so I mean, there were moments where, even though we're about the same age, I looked up to him in the way he conducted himself and the success he had. So how did you balance that, and what were the positives of that, and what were, you know, the things you kind of pushed against?
There's so many positives. So there's way more positives than negatives. For example, like meeting tons of different people, making great connections that I still talk to this day, you know, transferring that to deer, ducks, turkeys, whatever, you know, anything, like the whole industry. It's all kind of like one big thing that, you know, it's nice to, that he got me into the industry pretty much for the most part. And
did you grow up hunting and fishing with your dad?
I did grow up hunting and fishing with my dad. And, you know, I'm very blessed because I've had, you know, due to the fact that he is a guide and, you know, it's his full-time job, I've gotten to experience so many just out of this world fishing experiences. And he's taught me, you know, everything I know when it comes to fishing, a lot, 90% of the stuff I know when it comes to hunting. And then, when I was around 12 or so, I started getting into the waterfowl stuff, and that kind of took off from there. But
you were raised with the huge network that we all want as hunters and anglers. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah, I am very, very blessed, you know, and now I'm kind of transitioning back into that fishing phase a little bit more, you know, the real world hits a little bit. And then, you know, I see, you know, my dad, he's fishing every day, you know, he's doing what he loves, and I've gravitated more towards that lately. So hopefully, I'm hoping that someday I can make that my full-time gig too. I'm trying to transfer into that slowly.
Oh, that's incredible.
But
yeah, so I've seen, you know, I got to know you in the waterfowl, if you want to call it your waterfowl phase.
Yeah.
But, and I don't know if you got this from your dad or not, but you're one of those people. I mean, there are waterfowlers who are the ones who are the most successful waterfowlers. I always say there's three tiers of waterfowlers. There's those who will scout and aren't afraid to ask permissions. There's those who own the equipment. And then there's, so you've got your permission askers, you've got your people who own the equipment, and then on the third tier, you've got the grunts, the guys, the men and women who will show up just to haul decoys out of the trailer, and they want to be invited everywhere. And in that third tier, they kind of move in and out of groups, because if in waterfowl, it's kind of like a club or a fraternity of men and women who all contribute to it. And those who don't end up contributing, they kind of end up falling to the wayside a little bit. But you have always been in that top tier of people who have not been afraid to ask permissions, not been afraid to scout, not been afraid to buy, you spend your money, which is tough to come by as a young adult, on the best decoys and the best fields and the best places to go. I mean, you were into it wholeheartedly. You started guiding
big
it.
Big time, even. Yeah.
So when you're into it that much to that level, to someone like me, I start relying on the other people in the network who will scout, who will work on getting permissions,
yep.
because you're inviting each other on hunts. And when you started to drift from that, that was tough. So what drew you from that into those other things? Because we see the evolution of hunters very often from waterfowl to whitetail or to big game or to other types of hunting.
You know, I think one of the big things is, you know, the waterfowl game is no joke. You know, it's a lot of work. And if you're going to be a waterfowl hunter in the fall, you're going to be a waterfowl hunter and that's it for the most part. You know
right.
what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like
right.
you're going to spend most of your time because scouting and everything else, it just takes up so much time.
Yeah, it's another job.
So
sure.
on top of that, you know, I don't know what it is about being in a tree stand. It just brings me closer to God. I don't know.
Ha.
I love that.
Well, I don't think there's really a better answer to that. And
yeah.
I think sometimes the reason that whitetail, I love whitetail hunting. I mean, I want to be clear about it. But
yep.
it, to me, the allure to me, and I love whitetail hunting. The allure of the waterfowl hunt and chase and the turkey hunt and chase is you can, number one, you can talk with your friends when you're out there in between things, and you have more opportunities, literally more opportunities to put meat in the freezer when you waterfowl.
Yeah, no doubt about that.
And I want to talk, you know, I want to start getting into like the patience aspect of it. And the reason we're going to do our weekly Wiscos real quick, and I'm going to start with Cal because I already know what his is. And we're going to break down the science of how he attacks it. And I'm going to try to get him to tell some secrets. But we're going to, yeah. So let's hear, what is your weekly Wisco? What's your big thing that happened?
So on last week, Thursday, I shot, you know, one of the biggest bucks I've ever killed with the bow.
Wow.
Yes. And it is also one of the biggest bucks you killed because last year was also one of the biggest bucks you ever killed.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And there are so few people who do that consistently. And you at 24 years old are already someone who does, which is a virtual impossibility when it comes to killing big whitetail. I have been a whitetail hunter for 17 years. I do not have a whitetail as big as any of yours that are one of the biggest ones you've killed. So I want to get into the science. You know, we've had Paul House on the show before, who is an expert, literally an expert whitetail hunter. And I'm really excited about this because we got our weekly Wiscos coming up. We've got the recipe of the week coming up, that's for sure. But we're going to talk with Cal Hadia more about his love for whitetail, his huge success last week, and the season to come. This is Race in Wisco. Jamming out. If you're watching on Facebook or watching us live, you can see me jam out.
We're sorry.
Yeah, sorry. My apologies about that. This is Raised in Wisco. I'm your host, Joel Clayfish. Co-host Danielle Fairman has the week off, and I would ask her where she can catch the show if she doesn't catch it live. We are on 25 Civic Media stations throughout Wisconsin, now into Michigan and Minnesota. Welcome to our new stations, and I'm told you can
new
hear
neighbors.
Us in Illinois as well.
Yes, so you certainly can.
Even the, I can't say Flatlanders, can I? Is that a negative term?
I'm fine with it, but you have to ask Jacob.
Jacob, can we say Flatlanders?
I'm highly offended, Joel. I'm
I don't
very
buy
upset.
That for a second. Jacob.
Well, I don't think Jacob really gets offended.
Jacob I would never runs be sarcastic. The
Well, just for the folks listening and for everybody out there who's just tuning into the show for the first time, we love having you. This is a show about the outdoors of Wisconsin. Yes, we talk a lot of hunting. We talk a lot of fishing. We talk about kayaking, mountain climbing, camping, anything you can do in Wisconsin, which is the greatest outdoor state in the country, is what Raised in Wisco is about, because we talk about what you can take from Wisconsin's resources, their renewable resources, and make taste amazing and put on the table. And that's why we're so fortunate to have the culinarian official French chef Ellie Lawton as part of the show.
And Big Appetites.
And Big Appetites. And I think I do weigh probably close to 8 to 10 pounds more than before Chef Lawton started
bringing food.
And Noah, our in-house producer here, Noah Morris, how are you doing today?
Great.
Noah?
Yeah.
Rocking and rolling?
Noah, have you gained weight since you met me?
Yes.
No.
I don't think I've gained a single pound since high school, to be honest. I'm not even kidding.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, good for you. That will end someday, Noah.
Well, we love having you, Noah. We love having our listeners. And if you're new to Raised in Wisco, go to our Facebook page, Raised in Wisco.
Oh, yeah.
Follow us. Ask us questions. We even picked one of our most fervid guests, Gary Fluitt, and put him on the show
last
week. Hey,
Gary. Shout out to Gary.
He had a great time. He posted about it on his personal Facebook, I saw. And it's great to have loyal listeners. And we hear from you. I hear from you mostly at gas stations, because that's about the only place I go is gas stations.
You hang out at gas stations a lot?
I don't hang out at gas stations or truck
stops,
for that
lurk
matter.
Around until someone talks to you?
Noah.
Yeah, that's creepy. You're right, Noah.
Oh, my God. I'm in trouble if Noah's calling me creepy.
It is a little
creepy. Do not hang out at gas stations.
I've seen you hanging out at one before. I just hit the gas and kept going.
If I'm not at a gas station filling up, I'm on my way to the woods or the fields or the waterways of Wisconsin. That's a fact. You can hear us on Raised in Wisco live Saturdays at 11 o'clock on any one of the 25 civic media stations. And if you don't catch us live, Chef Lawton, where can you catch us?
If you miss us on Saturday, you can go to Spotify, search Raised in Wisco. You can go to civicmedia.us. Again, search Raised in Wisco. You can catch us on YouTube. And like Joel said, head over to our Facebook page, give us a like, tag us in your hunting, fishing, hiking pictures, leave us some recipes, chat with us. We'll chat back.
Yeah, so do that. And remember, I'm kind of old school, so I just put in a Google search, Raised in Wisco, and it comes right up.
Yeah.
So if you can't
That'll
hear us
too.
Live, definitely go and listen to the podcast version of the show. We were in our weekly Wiscos, and we've got guest Cal Hadia with us. He does an amazing job in the outdoors. He's a professional. He's a professional outdoorsman because you have been a paid guide. Yes. So
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess you could say that. Yeah.
It's fair to say that. And Cal capitalized before the rut on a monster buck and shot a monster buck, and that was his weekly Wisco. I cannot deny that.
We're gonna post a picture on our Facebook page.
Yeah,
so
we'll
everyone
do
can
that.
See.
Yeah, for sure. We'll get Raised in Wisco. We'll have Cal Hadia's monster buck. And I notice you even have a tattoo of antlers on your hand.
Sheds.
I love it.
Yep.
Wow. You are committed. I will give you that. I do not
All
have
about
a
it.
Tattoo. You are. And you're about to start a family. And is this new little one going to be a hunter, angler?
Well, Joel, his name is Fisher.
Oh my gosh.
That is what I am naming my son.
Fisher, I love that.
I love it. That's after clayfish, right?
Oh. whatever makes you happy.
I feel like maybe it's not.
There's no C in there, so it's a little different.
I feel like maybe you're right. It's probably not.
That is so cute.
We left off on Raised on our weekly Wiscos, and I think we all have one. Chef Lawton, do you have one for us?
I do have one. I wish Cal would have gone last because mine's just pathetic.
What? Why?
Well, because he got this awesome buck, and I just went out and tried to hunt another turkey, and those darn turkeys.
And you didn't have luck. Well, hey, you can't.
It was still a great evening in the woods.
Wait a minute. Yeah, okay.
What?
It was the week before that you killed the giant turkey?
Yeah.
At your parents' farm?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that counts still, I think. That
I want more turkey in my freezer.
Yes, I love eating turkey.
It's so good.
My weekly Wisco was actually indoors. As a matter of fact, my weekly Wisco was I brought wild turkey soup to the folks at Opportunities Incorporated, the A-team members, the folks who have at the Disability Work Center there.
Oh, and I bet they loved it.
I had an amazing time, and so did they, and
I hope you're going to share your recipe today.
I am not going to share my recipe today because you're the recipe. I can't if you
want. Oh, I'm going to share my recipe.
Noah, what's your weekly Wisco?
I spent most of Saturday outside. We were at the state marching band competition in Whitewater.
Oh, wow.
So my wife is the coach for the Color Guard, so that's why I was there.
Shout out to Lynn for coaching the Color Guard. Was Phantom Regiment there?
I do not know that.
Phantom Regiment,
I don't know, whatever
she
said.
From Rockford, Illinois, is amazing, but we've got some good ones here too. Jacob, do you have a weekly Wisco?
Yeah, I was mostly hanging out at gas stations, watching little Maria Menounos on the gas station TV, and had a good time overall. I mean, a lot of fun in Wisconsin.
You were waiting for Joel to show up.
I deserve that, I guess. I think I deserve
it. I just want to spend more time with my boss outside of work. I want to develop that relationship.
Yeah, I think it's going great, and we're thrilled to have you. I can't wait to talk with Cal Hadia, expert outdoorsman, about his massive buck kill, what the secrets are to getting where he needs to get to put that deer where you need it, because we're about to hit the rut and things are getting hot and heavy. This is Raised in Wisco. What's up, everybody? This is Raised in Wisco. Have we got an exciting show going? I'm telling you, Cal Hadia is here, professional sportsman, and somebody who is amazing to me because I just do not understand how to consistently kill white-tailed deer. I think it's patience, but I know it's a lot more than patience that matters. My name's Joel Clayfish. I have the distinct honor and privilege of hosting this show. Danielle Fairman, our co-host of this show, has the week off. Ellie Lawton, our chefferie, our official culinarian of Raised in Wisco, is filling in the co-host seat.
Hi.
Has it been any different? Is it any different for you filling in as co-host versus just being the chef?
No.
Okay.
Zero. Well, then. I mean, so far.
Well, then I think.
I've done it a few times and it kind of felt the
maybe
same.
Maybe I have done a bad job as host if it doesn't feel any different co-hosting the show or being the chef. I don't know. That's why I asked.
I don't know. I mean, I guess I'll look for more tips at the gas station next time I show up.
Okay. I'm never going to live that one down. Look, if I'm not in a field or in the woods, I'm usually the only place you'll see me is getting gasoline.
Listen,
Cal
and I were talking on the break, and we cracked the code to killing the big whitetail bucks.
Why would you do that during the break and not on the show?
Well, we discovered if you spend less time at the gas station, you can spend more time in the woods.
There we go. Perfect. If you don't spend any time at a gas station. Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize for loving Quick Trips.
Oh.
Oh, see? Hard to beat.
Yeah.
Hard to beat
Quick Trips. That's kind of the place
Although
to be.
Although, I do have a pretty cool hat from Bucky's. I really do.
But they're not in Wisconsin. Cool.
They're lost in Bucky's.
They're going to be soon.
You can get lost. You're right. You can get lost in Bucky's.
I can see why you'd spend a lot of time there.
You can get lost and spend all of your money.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. I am in trouble. Now, I don't have Danielle and Ellie teaming up on me to beat up, so Noah's jumping in.
Noah, thank you for stepping up.
Oh, my gosh.
Appreciate the support.
All right, Cal, you got to have my back, brother.
I'm just here, man.
Cal's neutral.
Cal is Switzerland.
I'm just here to listen.
You're here to tell us about your big buck story.
So let's talk. I kind of want to talk, and I don't mean to get into the minutiae or into the weeds here for folks who are not, you know, significant deer hunters, but this is the time of the year.
Big time.
This is the time that everybody who is a deer hunter, and I want to remind folks, we have the Orange Army in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
600,000 Wisconsinites.
Yes.
That's more than many, many countries have in their whole country. We have 600,000 Wisconsinites who hit the woods to harvest the 30-point buck.
Yeah, that it's a holiday.
Crazy.
It is like a holiday. It really is. It's a religion. It, you name it.
I mean, people take their kids out of school for opening gun
yes,
opener.
They do. Yes,
oh yeah,
they do.
My dad always used to when I was a kid.
That's cool.
And I don't have a problem with that, to be honest.
I don't either.
I think it's fine. I mean, you're getting an education. You're spending time with family.
Yeah,
with
yeah.
Friends.
Outside, fresh air.
So you harvested. I mean, let's just say. I mean, you're harvesting bucks in the 140, 150 class. Big deer.
Yeah.
Big deer. And you got one last year, and you got another one this year. I want to know, what is the difference that you, as a hunter, and I, you know, we explored this with Paul House, who's a great hunter. I want to know, what is the difference between a deer hunter like me who sits out every year for 17 years, and I have one buck on my wall that I shot opening day of gun season, but I bow hunt deer. What is the difference between the novice deer hunter and somebody like you who can do this consistently?
Consistency.
Well, but to tell me about that consistency.
So, like, earlier in the year, like, my deer season starts for me in, like, early summer. Between, like, putting food plots in, you know, taking care of stands and hanging cameras. So the biggest and most important thing that, you know, I'm not going to play it down at all. I think that 100%, without a doubt, there is no way I would have killed any of the deer I've killed without cell cameras.
Really? Yeah.
Not a chance.
Has that changed the game? I mean, has that completely 100%. Changed the game?
100%. But some people rely on them a little too much.
I was going to say, is it unfair? Do some people rely on them too much, and is it unfair?
You still got to outsmart a big animal. Mm-hmm. You know, they can be really, really, like those 4, 5, 6, 7-year-old deer can be really unpredictable. And, you know, they don't get big like that by being dumb, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
there's a reason why they're big and old.
What are you doing in June and July? You say you start in June and July. What on earth are you doing?
Every year is a little bit different for me because sometimes I get a little later start than others. But like I said, I typically putting in food plots and stuff like that. And a huge thing for me is...
Talk to me about the food plots. When are you tilling? What are you planting?
So I'm relatively new to the food plot game, to be honest with you. Planting like brassica, sugar beets, oats, rye, stuff like that. Just kind of a big blend.
What is your thought as to why you're planting those species of plants?
Because I want something for before first frost, and then after first frost, and then, you know, all the way to late season. I want something that they're going to be hitting throughout the whole entire season. So, like, that's why I put, like, the oats and rye in there, and the sugar beets, they'll dig them up late season when the snow hits, too, for, you know, extra nutrition and stuff like that. But the main thing I'm looking for early in the year is acorns.
Okay.
And white oaks in particular.
White oaks in particular.
Yeah.
Why? So when you go into the woods and you've got an area, I mean, are you knocking on doors? Do you have some private property? I want you to teach those of us out there who are not phenomenal whitetail hunters the steps you're going through and the extent you're going through to make this a successful hunt every year.
So the other most important thing is permission. Different properties, mm-hmm. different deer to hunt. So you're not pressuring. You know, pressure is a huge thing. I think that's one of the top five most important things of all time. If you're over-pressuring a mature deer, you're going to blow him out. And he's not coming back.
When you say over-pressuring, what do you mean?
What I mean by that is, like, if you're going in there on the wrong wind and you're not being super quiet when you're walking in there, and you just have to hunt smart. Hunting smarter, you know, you hunt a little bit less, but you have better odds. So, like, I've noticed in the past several years, like, the less I'm in there, you know, until the conditions are right, you know, you have much better odds for when they do come, because they feel super comfortable in there. You know, there's no predators chasing after them. Like, the
nothing
only thing
unusual
they,
happening.
Yeah, the only thing they have to worry about is, you know, the farmers or coyotes.
Mm-hmm. So what do you look... Are you saying this is, like, takes daily work? I mean, you looking at cameras daily, checking weather patterns daily, checking wind daily?
Yeah, wind. Once season comes around, for sure. So I have all the cameras I have are all cell cameras, so they just send all the pictures right to my phone. So that helps a lot.
Yes.
You know, it's not like the old school days where you have to go in and check your cameras. Yeah, every day. Man, that changed everything, like, big time. Because then you're not going in there, putting your scent in there, you know, all that extra pressure.
Or you go in there and the batteries are dead in your camera.
Yeah.
And you don't have any pictures. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's a big deal.
That was fun.
So how do you decide what days you're going to hunt? I mean, you work. You work another job as well. You're not just nobody's paying you thousands of dollars to hunt deer.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I wish.
Not yet, right?
I wish, yeah.
Well, you keep this up and somebody will, I'll tell you that.
I hope so, one day.
So you're looking every day to see how do you, on this particular day, you shot this huge buck, and we're going to post the pictures on Raised in Wisco Facebook page. How did you decide to hunt this deer?
So from early season all the way until the beginning of October, I kind of use my cameras because I have them in like different. So I have some in bedding, I have some in transition, some in food, and then like this time of year, which is super important around acorns, mm-hmm. like I was saying before. And the tree that I shot this one at is kind of a spot where they just come through, they browse around on the acorns and some of the other brush in the area, and then work their way into the alfalfa. So, I get a trail cam history of like patterns. So like early October is like the best time, in my opinion, to pattern a big deer.
Because they're not chasing.
Does. Yeah.
They're not in the rut yet. And for those who don't, you know, who are learning about this, the rut is the breeding period, and that's when the bucks are literally chasing does to breed with them.
Yeah, and they'll go miles and miles and miles. So, like, I think
this is kind of the calm before the storm.
Yeah, big time. I mean, once the rut hits, you know, that's anyone's deer. You know what I'm saying?
I have a question. Because you pattern these deer so often, this year we had a warmer September and beginning of October. So did you notice that those patterns were drastically different, or did you not really see a big difference?
It was easier for me this year. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was all the rain keeping them out of certain areas mm-hmm. on the properties that I hunt. But honestly, like another thing that I was doing early that helped with this deer was, you know, glassing mm-hmm. from my truck.
Yeah.
In the evenings right before dark, I would go out and I would just glass the fields. In the areas that I hunt when
you
I
mean
could.
Using binoculars to look and see if you could see the deer you were after.
Yep.
Hmm.
Huh. That's incredibly interesting to me.
Well, this makes me feel like a really bad whitetail hunter.
Well, when you hear somebody who makes a science out of it.
Yeah, it's so fascinating. I love it.
I can't help but feel like, you know, a not adequate whitetail hunter either. But I also want to stress, you know, and to the audience and to the people listening, that a whitetail hunter is somebody who puts the science into it and this much time into it. It is equally the person who hunts once a year during deer camp and goes out with a rifle and rifle hunts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And everywhere in between. I just think that it's not coincidental that people say 10% of the hunters kill 90% of the species thereafter. And I stress water when it comes to waterfowl and turkey hunting, scouting, and then when you're done scouting, scout.
Yeah.
It's like, and then when you're in the field, you brush in your blind till it's perfect, and then right before you hunt, you brush in your blind more. These are kind of the basic elements, and sometimes don't you think people get a little too caught up in the science of it and kind of forget some of the basics, like movement and things like that?
I would 100% agree with that. I think some people get too caught up in what they've been told or what's online or what's on the internet. Like the main majority, you know, like the most important things, you got to be out in the woods. You can't shoot them from your couch.
Right.
You know, so.
That is a fact.
I think being in the woods is the best way to learn.
Yeah, and we're going to have you back. We're going to have you back with Paul House, and we're going to talk about the rut coming up one of these days soon, because I think that's a completely different subject, how to hunt a deer during the rut.
For sure.
And that's also a fascinating one to me, because you're literally pulling their attention away from breeding, which is one of the hardest things to do, I think. But back to the listening too much to other people. When I first started turkey hunting, everybody said they don't go to decoys in the fall. They don't come to calls in the fall. Yeah. And I didn't know that because I was brand new. So I went out there and put out decoys and called and had this unbelievable turkey success in the fall with calling and putting out decoys. So very often, you know, obviously take what you hear and use it as a portion of how you hunt. Because I think what you said at the end there is the most important thing, and that is you can't be a successful hunter from your couch. Now, you certainly can be a successful eater from your couch.
No doubt about that.
And that is very important.
You have to be
me.
In the kitchen to cook it first.
And at the end of the day, Raised in Wisco is a cooking show. And coming up, we've got an awesome recipe from acclaimed official French chef Ellie Lawton. This is Raised in Wisco. Raised in Wisco's going to help you with the outdoors of Wisconsin. Love our new guests. We can be heard on all civic media stations statewide and now into Minnesota and Michigan. Excited about that. My name's Joel Clayfish. I get to host this fantastic ship of a show. Danielle Fairman helps us steer the course. She's got the week off. And Chef Ellie Lawton is filling in for her. We've got Cal Hadia, awesome sportsman, good friend of mine. Enjoy spending time in the waterfowl woods with you, Cal, quite a bit. But let's make no mistake about it. I love to eat. And part of this show that we love bringing you is fast, easy recipes with wild game, wild forage from the field to the table. Chef Lawton.
Yes. Well, I have a cool recipe I'm going to talk about today, and Cal said he has a recipe he's going to share, too.
Heck yeah.
And I think they're both venison recipes, right,
perfect.
Cal?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, so, Cal, you want me to go first? You're going to go first.
You can go first.
Okay.
I got to remember mine.
You got to remember yours. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so I made some braised venison with tomatillo and poblano peppers. So this is one of my go-to. Like if I have some venison roast in the freezer I need to get rid of, or I just need a quick, awesome, flavorful, healthy meal, I throw this one together. So I'm going to run down the ingredient list, which is very short, which I like to see.
Yes, I love short and easy.
And then we will post the measurements and the detailed instructions on the Facebook page so you guys can comment, follow along, make it. It's fantastic. So you will need a venison roast. Any kind will do, or you can swap out beef or whatever kind of roast you have at home. You can use it for this recipe. You need a tomatillo, just one, which is great. Onion, garlic, leeks, some Anaheim peppers, or you can swap out another pepper if you'd like. Poblano peppers, a little bit of white wine. So shout out to Megan Salad Bar, our wino.
We haven't called her that yet, but sure.
That's a new
not?
One. Chicken stock, lime juice, bay leaf, salt, and pepper. That's it.
All right. So, well, tell us how to put it together because I'm already hungry.
Okay, very easy. So you're going to dice your onions, your leeks, and your garlic. Put those aside. Then you're going to get a nice hot pan with some oil in it. You're going to brown the venison roast on all sides or whatever roast you're using. Set that aside. Put those chopped veggies into your pot. Warm those up a little bit till your onions get about like translucent colored. You're going to add a little bit of white wine to that pan, deglaze it. So we've talked about that before. Deglazing the pan is adding a wine or a stock to the bottom of that pan to kind of scrape off all those good little chunks of butter or oil or onions, whatever you have in there. And then once that's done, you're going to throw your meat in. You're going to char a poblano pepper. So if you don't have a gas oven, what I like to do is I'll just put it in a really hot pan and char the sides of it. So that'll work too. So you're going to throw that into your pot. You're going to cover the meat with chicken stock, and you're going to put that tomatillo in there, cover it, and let it simmer on low.
How long?
Till it's done, Joel.
What temperature are you looking for on the inside of it, or is this one of those where it's going to start to fall apart?
It's going to start to fall apart. Now, you can... You can take it out. I've had it both ways. I've done it to like a medium, so like a 130.
Okay.
And I've also let it sit in there until it started to shred, and you can put that on top of some rice. It's so good. You can make nachos with it.
Sounds unbelievable.
So with this recipe, I always do this one particular side dish because I really love it, and it's called a sweet potato gratin. So it's just going to be sliced sweet potatoes layered in a casserole dish with some olive oil, some caramelized onions, and some cotija cheese. And it is fantastic with this dish. You have the peppers, the tomatillo, that you're going to have some a really awesome stock or au jus, if you want to call it, with that meat. It's so good.
It sounds unbelievable.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
What I love about it is, and a lot of the recipes you talk about, is that they're not your traditional throw it in with butter and onions and be done, but they're just as simple as that, really.
I do a lot of basic recipes with just a couple different flavors. You know, the poblano peppers. A lot of people don't use them, and they're kind of a sleeper pepper, and they're awesome.
I love them. And, poblano is the pepper they make where they dip it in egg.
Chili relleno.
Chili rellenos with that, yes.
Yes.
And I love those peppers.
It's a great pepper. I put them in my chili.
They have a very unassuming, sweet taste to them as well.
They're fantastic.
Yeah.
And all these recipes, for the most part, it's all whole foods. I mean, it's
no doubt
field to table. It's wonderful. You can swap out the proteins. They're just fantastic.
Yes, this is
so. Please make it.
Spanish
this is one bent. Of my. This is one of my favorites. So please give it a try when you see that recipe come up on the Facebook page.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. Cal. All right, Cal.
What do you have for us?
So I can't. I'll have to give you guys the specifics after.
Yeah.
But it's a venison tenderloin sandwich.
Okay, so bring we it like on. The sound
I had
of
some
that.
Sandwiches.
I had a brioche bun.
Yep.
And then I had lemon mayonnaise
Ooh,
on the bottom.
Ooh. We like mayonnaise.
So you cook the steak, you know, in a frying pan, and then you baste it with, you know, some garlic butter.
Yeah. Ooh.
And then
cow.
Slice it up, and then lay it on the sandwich, and then I caramelize some onions with some balsamic glaze.
Yeah.
Put that on top.
You're really coming to town today. Jeez. Yeah.
And then arugula on top of that, and then some more balsamic glaze, and it was
fantastic. That sounds amazing.
Cow. Next time you come, you're bringing that.
I will.
I'm telling you.
I have plenty of venison now. So
yeah, now
we
my
can
mouth
do that.
Is watering.
You need
that
to make it and send us a picture, and we'll post it on the Facebook
so
page
good.
Along
yeah.
with your deer.
Wow. Yeah, it's like one of my favorite things.
Make that, it and take a picture.
I have
for
not
sure.
had anything like that before, so I'm kind of really hungry now.
Well, I have to say, we have to have Cal back because not only did he talk great stuff about strategies for whitetail hunting, he also brought a recipe that impressed the official chef. So,
Cal, I'm going to make
I'm
that and let
you
know how
it's
it turns
really good,
out.
Yeah.
It sounds amazing.
That sounds it's
great.
Unbelievable.
And Cal needs to come back so we can take some more knowledge out of his brain when it comes to rut. And I want to talk about waterfowl hunting in a future
we
show.
We are going to do that. And I'm excited to say we're going to have another acclaimed chef on the show with us.
Oh, yeah.
Chef Jerry Garcia.
That's exciting.
The old tailgate tips guy from the Milwaukee Brewers, high school classmate of mine, is coming
Wonderful.
On a future show as well. Danielle will be back next week. This is Raised in Wisconsin.